All right, we're beginning here on the bottom of Nun Bet Amud Bet. Just to review, the conclusion of the sugya was Amar Rabbi Yochanan Nimnu Vigamru Hamikadesh Bechelko Ben Kodshei Kodashim Ben Kodshim Kalim Lo Kidesh. So Rabbi Yochanan says that the Bnei Yeshiva came to a conclusion that the Alocha is like Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, not like Rabbi Yehuda, or that Rabbi Yehuda was Chozer Mishitato. And therefore, when it comes to Kiddushin, the Kohen cannot use his portion in the Kodshim Kalim or the Kodshei Kodashim to create Kiddushin. Rav Amar Adayin Hi Machloket. Rav says that it still remains a Machloket, whether that means Lo Amdu L'Minyan, they never came to a conclusion, or that Rabbi Yehuda was not Chuzer B'Shitato, but either way, Rav says the Machloket still stands. Amar Abaye, Kavate de Rabbi Yochanan Mistavro. According to Rabbi Yochanan, Shita makes sense, or Rabbi Yochanan's conclusion makes a lot more sense. The Tanya, because we have a Braita. Braita is a Midrash Halacha that is dealing with two Psukim that are found in Parshat Tzav, in Perek Zayin, Pasukim, Tet, and Yud. Over there it says, V'chol mincha, asher te'afe b'tanur, v'chol nasa b'marcheshet v'al machavat, l'kohen ha-makrivota lo tiyeh. So this tells you that any mincha that comes, and it lists the menachot, me'afe tanur, marcheshet, machavat, the Kohen who brings it will be entitled to that mincha, that's kodshei kodashim. V'chol mincha b'lulah b'shemen, v'chareva, so any mincha that is mixed with oil, or that is dry, l'chol b'nei aron tiyeh ish ke'achiv. They will belong to the Kohanim, each one accordingly, meaning on an even basis. So you have here two psukim that first of all repeat the fact that the Kohen has the rights to the mincha, and besides that, it spells out every type of mincha that you could have. So the Midrash Halacha, the Sifra, Torat Kohanim, on Sefer Vayikra, darshins that pasuk, and that's the Tanya, that's the bright that we're about to bring now, to tell us information about these extraneous aspects of these psukim. Tanya, minayin shen chokim menachot keneged zvachim. How do we know that when the Kohanim are dividing up the menachot, they can't say, listen, you take my part in the mincha, I'll take your part in the zavach, I like meat, you like bread, well, split it, I'll take your portion here, you take my portion there. Talmud lomar, v'chol mincha asher te'afe betanur, v'chol b'nei aron tiyeh. So here they take one of the menachot that's mentioned there and say that they belong to b'nei aron. Yachol lo yechalku menachot keneged zvachim. You would think you cannot divide a mincha vis-a-vis a zevach, shalo kamu tachtehem bidalut, because when it comes to a poor person, a mincha does not replace the zevach. So we have in different cases, we have korbanot that are driven by the economic standing of the individual. Those are korbanei oleh v'yored, where you have three different levels of what a person would bring, a zevach, an of, or a mincha. We also have in other places, like by a yoledet, and like by a mitzorah, where there is an ani who has the ability to bring a korban of lesser cost. So in those cases, not always do we have it that the zevach can be replaced by the mincha. Most times the zevach is replaced by the oaf, by a bird, and then the bird is replaced by a mincha when you can't afford the bird. At least that's true by the korban oleh v'yored, by the yoledet as well. So here, maybe the reason you cannot split zevach versus mincha is because a mincha doesn't replace a zevach. Aval yichalku menachot keneged afot. But you will be allowed to split a mincha versus a fowl, sharei kamu tachtehem bidalut. Because in the case of the korban oleh v'yored, goes zevach, someone who's a little of less means brings an oaf, someone in poverty brings a mincha. So over here, the mincha replaces the oaf. So maybe they are interchangeable. Tamar lomar, b'chol anasa b'marcheshet, b'chol b'nei aron tiyeh. So again, it specifies another mincha, and from that extraneous lashon, the Gemara learns, no mincha versus an oaf. Yochol lo yehelchuku menachot keneged ofot, sho'alalu minei damim, v'alalu minei k'machim. Maybe the whole reason that you can't split a mincha versus a zevach or versus an oaf is because zevach and oaf are damim, blood that ends up on the mizbeach. Whereas a mincha is a flower offering, and therefore, maybe it's a different category. Aval, yechalku ofot keneged zvachim. But birds versus zevach versus behemot, Maybe there you could split them against each other. Shalalu ve'alalu minei damim. Because they are both korbanot whose blood ends up on the mizbeach. Tamalomar al-machavat. So there again, another lashon of mincha that is mentioned in the pasuk to teach you that you cannot split them. You have to split each item independently and individually. The words are extraneous. It's not directly from the words themselves. So the fact that these words are extraneous in the pasuk and not necessary. So because of that, they learn out that each item that is mentioned here is particular and teaches you a new aspect, which is menu inyan lezeh. It's not necessary for the menachot anymore because we already have the menachot that are listed. So now the extraneous menachot, we're going to take and use them to teach us about other information. You would think the reason maybe you can't split ofot versus zvachim, you can't say, you take the of, I'll take the zevach, is because the korban behemah is done with a kli. You shecht it with a knife. You do the Kabbalat Adam in a kli, and then you place that on the Mizbeach, versus the oath that is shechted by Malika, is done by the thumb of the Kohen, and then the Damim of the bird itself are squeezed onto or put on the Mizbeach itself, so there's no kli involved. So maybe that's a distinction that makes it that you cannot exchange them. But, Yechalku Melachot Keneged Minachot, maybe one mincha versus another mincha, shalalu v'alalu maseyem biyad, because both minachot are done biyad, and they are similar in nature. I mean that they are not damim versus kemachim, they're both kemach, and the mincha itself, when you take out the komets, it's done by the yad of the kohen. Takes that with his hand. So tamalovar, v'chol mincha b'lula b'shemen, l'chol b'nei aron. So that again, another mincha teaches you, no, that every mincha is considered to be separate. You would think that you can only can't split menachot that are different against each other. Machavat and marcheshet are the kelim in which the mincha is prepared. The machavat is a flat type of frying pan, and therefore it's a harder, crispier mincha, versus the marcheshet, which is a deep pan, and therefore it sits in the oil, and it's a softer, spongier type of mincha. Shizum asem rakim, because these are soft. Mizum asem kashim, and these are hard. Meaning that the deep pot, the marcheshet is, rach, is soft because of the oil that is associated with it. Whereas the machavat, where it's a thinner pan, and the oil gets fried off, and it makes into a crispier mincha, those are kashim. Aval yechalku machavat keneged machavat to marcheshet keneged marcheshet. If they're the same mincha, maybe I can trade that off. I can say to you, you take that marcheshet, I'll take this marcheshet. You take that machavat, I'll take this machavat. Shalalu v'alalu maseim kashim. Because either they're both crispier, thinner, cracker-like. Inami maseim grakim. Or they are thicker, more spongy, bread-like. Tamalomar v'chareva. Again, another mincha that is mentioned there, the dry mincha. T'chol b'nei aron t'yeh. So therefore, you have to say every mincha is independent and every division is independent. Maybe this is all true only on items or with items that are kodesh kodeshim, because a mincha is kodesh kodeshim. Ava yechalku b'kodeshim kalim. Maybe by kodeshim kalim they can do these types of trade-offs. Tamlomar ish ki achiv. Again, the second pasuk says again that they have to split it. Seemingly extraneous lashon, which was already mentioned in the first pasuk, and that teaches you that even by kodshim kalim, it is the case because the samichle, because adjacent to that it says imal toda. The next parshia there is vizot todrat zevach hashlamim asher yakriv laHashem imal toda yakrivenu. So it's speaking about a kurban toda, which is kodshim kalim. Kesheim shein chokim bekodshim kodashim, kachen chokim bekodshim kalim. Just like you don't split by kodshei kodashim, so too you don't split by kodshim kalim. Ish is, so the word ish, because it says over here, kol b'nei aron t'yeh ish ki'achiv. What do you do with the word ish? Ish cholek afilu balmum. And ish divides up, even if he is a balmum, because he works in the mikdash, therefore he's entitled to split the korbanot, even though he can't do avoda. Ben akatan cholek v'afilu tam. But a katan, who's not an ish, cannot be a participant in the splitting of the korbanot. The truth is that the fact that a balmum participates, we don't learn from this pasuk, we learn it from somewhere else. The real limud from this pasuk is ish and not katan, that we learn from this pasuk. And now the Gemara says, Stam Sifra Mani. Who is the Stam author of Torah Kohanim, or the Sifra, the Midrash Halacha and Vayikra? Is Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara in other places speaks about how all the Stam Tanaic works are Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Like Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir here. Over here, the Gemara tells us that Stam Sifra is Rabbi Yehuda. Now, why is that important? Because Rabbi Yehuda is one of the Chokim in this din about what are the Kohanim's rights within the Kodshim Kodashim and the Kodshim Kalim. And over here, Rabbi Yehuda is the author of Torat Kohanim, Hukamar, Deleipa Din Chalukah Klal. And he's saying that there's no divisible properties of these Kodshim, meaning that you can't trade them off. If they were the monetary rights of the Kohanim, then they should be able to trade them for whatever they want. Shmamina, that Rabbi Yehuda was chuzer from his position, and that would support Rabbi Yochanan's contention here that the halacha is like Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, and now Rabbi Yehuda, who changed his mind and says that the Kohanim have no rights in the Korban. Because if they had monetary rights, they could trade those monetary rights to someone else, and then they could divide up. They could say, you take the Zevach, I'll take the Mincha, because those are their monetary rights. Now, the truth is that in other places we do find that the Kohanim do have rights or monetary rights in the object, despite the fact that they can't split the items or that it's divided up evenly and they don't have rights to trade it off against something else. So why is the Gemara so certain over here that just because they can't trade off the Korbanot one against each other proves to you that there are no monetary rights? The answer might be because of the fact that by Kodshim, the mitzvah is not completed when you get it or when you receive it, but rather only after you have eaten it. And so therefore, just because you've received your portion doesn't mean now that you have rights to do with what you want with it, because there's still a mitzvah involved in this item. That mitzvah is that you should eat it in order to provide the kapara for those that brought the korban. And there might be, we've discussed in another context, a mitzvah to eat kodashim, whether that's a mitzvah that devolves upon each kohen, or all the class of kohenim in total, but there is a mitzvah to complete the item. So because of that, even though in other places we find that the kohenim do get monetary rights by which they can be mekadesh and isha, for instance, by gezel ager, where they get the money that is taken from the ger because he has no inheritors, the money goes to the kohenim and is divided up amongst the kohenim, over there they can use that money to be mekadesh and isha. They do have that type of ownership. Over there, the reason is because the mitzvah is done once the money gets to the hands of the Kohanim. So since the mitzvah is done, the money is theirs to do as they please with. But then by the Korbanot over here, once the chelik reaches them, it's still not theirs to do what they please with it because of the fact that the mitzvah is not complete. The mitzvah is not complete until they eat it, until it's consumed. And so because of that, there's still a residual aspect of, I call it, Kodesh ownership or God's ownership in the item, which doesn't allow the Kohanim to use it freely once it's already divided and given to them. You could argue that, yes, you can't divide one against the other, but once it's divided and given to the Kohen, it's his to do what he pleases with, and he has rights in it. The answer is no, because his rights are not in the fact that he has it now, may do what he wishes with it. No, he has a specific instruction about, or a specific indication of what he does with this. He has to eat it, and he has to do the mitzvah of eating it, and therefore that remains a problem for him to utilize it for a kiddushin. And so then Rabbi Yehuda's shita now conforms with that of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, and that would support Rabbi Yochanan's contention that the halacha here is that you cannot be mekadesh nisha with your portion of the kodshim kalim or the kodshei kodashim. Right? Amar Rava ucharav milo tanya. We don't have a braita that supports Rav's contention over here. Vatanya, don't we have a braita? Atznuim moshchim et yedem vagarganim chokim. That when it comes to the lechem apanim, the tznuim usually is a reference to people who are makpid ala mitzvot, people who act properly within the rules and the letter and spirit of the law of the Torah. So those individuals, you stop to eat them. But garganim, and the more gluttonous ones, used to divide up the lechem apanim. So here, it's talking about a case after the time of Shimon HaTzadik, because it says that when Shimon HaTzadik was alive, there was a bracha matzah b'isa, that there was a bracha in the loaves or in the lechem apanim that were found in the Mikdash. And therefore, every Kohen who got a portion of the lechem apanim, his portion satisfied him. It was enough. Everyone got a kazayit, and that kazayit was satisfactory. After Shimon HaTzadik, then it stopped being that way. There was a me'ira ba'lechem or ba'isa. And then the lechem apanim, when you got your little piece, first of all, there wasn't sufficient for each individual. So only could pull. And even when you got it, it was definitely not satisfying. So what the tznuim did was they no longer took. They felt that the lechem apanim was already had a me'ira, a curse associated with it, and they weren't getting a full amount anyway, and so they pulled away from taking it. Now, that's interesting because that goes back to what we discussed before, and this is pivotal in that understanding of whether there's a mitzvah on the Kohanim to eat the Kodashim and to eat the things that they have in the Mikdash. Over here, it seems that the Kohanim, Tznuim, pulled away, implying that they don't have a particular obligation to eat the Kodashim, but rather the class of Kohanim has it, and they left it to the other Kohanim to do it. You could argue, and the Rishonim do, that in this case, the Tznuim pulled away because they were not going to get a kezayit. They weren't going to get the sufficient amount that would make it into a mitzvah of echilat kodashim. And therefore, they pulled out. On the other hand, these gluttonous individuals used to snatch or take over the pieces of those that didn't take. So what we're suggesting over here is that here you see that the Tznuim's chilek went to those of the garganim. So they are taking a portion of the Tznuim. That's number one. Number two, you assume that the Tznuim were trading this off against something else. They were taking their portion somewhere else and not in the Lechem HaPanim. Gemara says, no, my Chokim, Chotvim. Chokim over here doesn't mean that they divided it up, that the Garganim took the portion of the Tznuim and they got something else in return. Rather, Chotvim, they snatched it, which means that they weren't asking the Tznuim, they just were gluttonous, hungry, and they went in and grabbed the portion so that they got their portion. They didn't worry about other people who didn't get their portion. There was an incident where this individual took his portion and the portion of his friend. They called him the son of the chamtzan. Chamtzan over here means the grabber, the thief, until the day of his death. Now Tosafot raises the question, which is a fair question, wasn't everybody doing this? Meaning that the way that the Gemara is now describing is that kulam chutvim, they were all grabbing it. So just because this guy grabbed the other guy's portion, that's what they were all doing. Why is he unique in any way? So you could say that the Seifa is describing the phenomenon of the Reisha, or you could say that he was different, because in the Reisha, they were only snatching the portion of the Tznuim, those that didn't want to take or weren't showing up. In the Seifa, this guy snatched the portion of one of his friends who was a gargan. And therefore he got a bad name because he didn't just snatch those that didn't show up. He snatched one of the other guys who was also a grabber and he snatched his portion. Amar Rabba Bar Shila Maikora. What is the pasuk that tells us the word chamtzan is associated with theft? Elokai, palteni miyad rasha. Shem, save me, rescue me from the hands of those that are evil. Mikaf, mi'avel v'chometz. From the hand or the palm of those that pervert justice, vichometz, and steal, and those that are taking unjustly. Rabba Amar Mihocha, he says it from this pasuk, limdu heitev, dirshu mishpat, learn well, seek out justice, ashru chamotz, and make sure that the one who has been stolen from, the one who is the victim, is taken care of, is straightened out. And chamotz, again here, is the one who has been stolen from, the victim of theft. So you see the word chamotz is used in context of meaning to steal or to take that which belongs to others. And therefore, they called him ben chamtzan, was a reference to this fact that he was a thief or unjust in his taking of those. And he gained himself this nickname. Even amongst the thieves, he was the thief of thieves. And therefore, he gained himself the name of ben chamtzan. Two questions to note over here. Number one is, the second bright that we brought, how do we know that it's authored by Rabbi Yehuda? It's not a stam sifra anymore. And yet, Rava is bringing something that's supposedly a supporter to Rav because it's authored by Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's name is not mentioned here, and it's also not a stam sifra. So Rashi says the reason is, Balkorcha ha Rabbi Yehudi, damar memonohu. Because it's someone who says that it's his right to exchange. And we have no one else who says that it is Mamon of the Kohen himself when it comes to these Kodshei Kodoshim. And so that's the attribution must be to Rabbi Yehuda. And that's how he proves his point. Rabbi Yehuda's position is still the same. In the end, the Gemara says, no, because they weren't trading it, they were snatching it, and therefore maybe it's not the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, because they weren't trading the Mamon. Number two is, the Gemara in Masechet Sukkah, which mentions the fact that when on Shabbat they changed over the Mishmar, it says that the Mishmar coming in and the Mishmar going out divided up the Lechem HaPanim. Chalko HaMigiyo Kamar. Bo'jaita bo bracha. Rashi gives two answers as to when that happened. That either happened when there was still bracha, and therefore the Mishmar divided it up and everybody participated. Or the Gemara and Sukkah is only describing the division on a gross basis between the two different Mishmarot. It's not saying that within the Mishmar that everybody ate it. The subdivision within the Mishmar might be what this bright is addressing, whereas that Gemara and Sukkah is dividing this Mishmar and the other Mishmar. Doesn't mean that these incidents or these distinctions weren't taking place. The second thing is interesting of note here is that in the first Braita that we brought, which is a Stam Sifra's Rabbi Huda, the Braita or the Midrash Halacha concludes there is a smichut aparshiot between the Menachot over here and the Kochim Kalim. And from that you learn that Kochim Kalim are subject to the same din. The only problem is Rabbi Huda himself believes that there's no such thing as smichut aparshiot in the Torah except for Dvarim. In Sefer Dvarim he thinks there are smuchin, but outside of Sefer Dvarim there are no smuchim. And here we're talking about Sefer Vayikra. So why does he darish smuchim over here? So Tosafot says it's not really smuchim. Ela vav mosif al yinyan rishon. The fact that the next parshia begins vizot Torah zevach hashlamim, the vav is above a chibur that tells you there's some sort of connection over here, and that's the drasha, not the smichut of the parshiot, the fact that they're adjacent to each other, but the fact that there is actually a vav that connects them. That's what generates the drasha. Others say that Rabbi Huda is doresh smuchim when it's mufneh, when the words are extraneous. And as we noted before, the words here are extraneous, or they're definitely extraneous words in those psukim. And for that reason, he does doresh the smuchim in this instance. Now the Gemara continues and tries to discuss their position with regards to Maaser Sheni and Hekdesh in the Mishnah. Maaser Sheni, ben Bishogeg, ben Bemezid, lo Kidesh, to Rabbi Divi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir believes that Bishogeg or Bemezid, Maaser Sheni does not work in order to generate Kiddushin. Be'udah Omer, Shogeg, lo Kidesh, Mezid, Kidesh. If he did it unintentionally, no Kiddushin. If he does it intentionally, there is Kiddushin. Menahani Mile, how do we know, or where would he know this from? I'm Rav Acha Brei D'Rava Mishmei the Gemara. So Rav Acha Brei D'Rava says in the name of the Gemara. Rashi says, what does it mean Mishmei the Gemara? Kach nikva bi Gemara shkura b'fi bnei Beit HaMidrash. It was a common known misora. It was something that was widely accepted in the Beit Midrash. So he doesn't quote it from a particular source, but rather from the general misora he is quoting it from. In other places, we say Mishmei the Gemara sometimes means Ki'ilu Allah ala Moshe Misinai. That's obviously not the case over here. V'chol ma'asar ha'aretz, mizera ha'aretz, mipri ha'etz, la'shem hu. Kodesh la'shem. La'shem hu, v'lo l'kadesh bo isha. So they learn out from this that it is for Hashem, ma'isur sheni, or the masrot belong to Hashem, and you may not use it for kiddushin. Harei trumat maser. What about Trumat Maser? Why can't you use that then? Here we're talking about Maaser Sheni. Maybe you should be able to use Trumat Maser. Dichtiv. There it says, Kein Tarimu Gamatem. Trumat Hashem. So over there, it also says Trumat Hashem. So if you make a similar drusha, which is Trumat Maser belongs to Hashem and not to you to use for your personal transactions or Kiddushin, that's not. Don't we have a Mishnah? Ha Mikadesh Bitrumot Mikudeshet. Someone who makes kiddushin or generates kiddushin with trumot, different types of truma, mikudeshet, it works. So now you're telling me there's a drosha by maser that says it belongs to Hashem, not to you. Yet you have the same Hashem by truma, and we don't make a similar drosha. So how could that be the source? It says, dokli bei la Hashem. It doesn't say to Hashem, but rather trumat Hashem. That's different. There's one thing where you say, Mipriyaitz Lashem and Kodesh Lahashem. Kodesh Lashem means that it belongs to Hashem and it still remains in that holy state of Hashem. Whereas Trumat Hashem just tells you that the Truma is from Hashem, but then it could be granted to the Kohanim. It doesn't say that the Truma is Hashem still. Vare Chala. What about Chala, which is Reshit Arizotechem? The portion of your dough that you separate out, Tichtiba titnu l'Hashem. There it says you give it to Hashem. So there you do have the word l'Hashem. Vatnan hamikadesh bitrumot mikudeshet. The same Mishnah that we quoted before, we use the word trumot in plural because trumot can come in different forms. You can have truma gedola, trumat maser, and chala, which is also called truma. And so all of those trumot you're allowed to use for kiddushin, yet chala, which is a form of truma, has the word l'Hashem mentioned by it. Delo tibe kodesh. It's missing the word kodesh. So right now the Gemara says in order for you to be deemed so kodesh that you cannot use it or utilize it for your personal needs, it has to say kodesh and l'Hashem. So truma is missing l'Hashem, chala is missing the kodesh aspect, and therefore they are not subject to this rule. Vare shvi'it. What about shvi'it? Dichtiba yovel hi kodesh tiyalachem. And it says over there that it's yovel and it's kodesh. Vitznan amekadesh b'peirot shvi'it mikudeshet. If you use the peirot shvi'it, you are mikudeshet. The loktibe, the Gemara gives the easy answer. It doesn't say l'Hashem. It does say the word kodesh, but it doesn't have the word l'Hashem in there. Now, even though the pasuk that we quoted is about the yovel, the Gemara is using that to prove the status of shvi'it, and that's because in general, Shvi'it and Yovel have the same din. So unless specified otherwise, whatever din applies by Yovel will also apply by Shvi'it. So even though you have the word L'Hashem by Yovel, it's still not enough to make it Kodesh L'Hashem, where it would preclude you to be using it to be Mikadesh Aisha. Vare Truma Dichtiv. What about Truma? Again, we're going back to Truma. Here we're talking about Truma Gdola. Kodesh Israel L'Hashem Reshit Tevuato. This is the Mashal in Yirmiyahu Bet, where it says that Israel is holy to Hashem, the same way that Reshit Tvuato, Truma, that is taken off of the Tvua is Kodesh L'Hashem, so too Bnei Israel are separated from the other nations and designated or delineated to be Kadosh. V'tnan, HaMekadesh V'Trumot Mikudeshin. And again, we just said before that if you use Truma, it's not a problem. And over here it has the word Kodesh, and it has the word L'Hashem. How will be Yisrael Ktiv? That's not talking about Truma, it's talking about Bnei Israel. But the Gemara's question is obvious now. If you compare Bnei Yisrael to Truma, and you give some sort of defining factor to Bnei Yisrael, that means that that same factor must be true by the Truma. The Mashal and the Nimshal have to work in tandem. And if you're comparing Bnei Yisrael to the Truma, and you call them Kodesh L'Hashem, that implies that Truma is also Kodesh L'Hashem. So why isn't that the case? The Gemara says, Targum Rav and Sava, Kamed Rav, Amarkra, who, behavioto tehei, that the answer is that the word who teaches you that it remains in that status. The status does not change, and therefore now the Gemara has rejected its understanding until now, and says that mipirets l'Hashem who, behavioto yehei, means it remains in its kedusha as maiser sheni, and since it remains in its kedusha as maiser sheni, you cannot utilize it for being mekadesh and isha for kiddushin. Whereas all these other aspects or other items don't have the word who that is associated with them. And since they don't have the word who, even though they might have the word L'Hashem or Kodesh, any of those other words, it would not help because they don't have the word who. Even though by Shvi'it, by the Yovel, it says, Yovel hi Kodesh Tielachem. And over there, you could make the argument, hi Bav Yototei. You could make that same argument over there. Either you have to say that the Gemara is cumulative over here, which is that it says Kodesh, L'Hashem, and who. You need all of those items. And therefore, since Yovel is missing the L'Hashem aspect of it, it doesn't work. That's one way you could answer the question. Or you could say that the Gemara did reject the previous answers of Kodesh and L'Hashem, but over here, the word he, Yovel he, is used for a different limud. It's not available to tell you, Baviyatote. And Achanami, had it been available, maybe you could have been Doresh that, but we used that for a different drusha. And only the word who by Maaser Sheni is available for that drusha, and that's why we make the drusha. But in Achanami, if we found an extraneous word in another context, we would make the same drusha, and it would apply in the same way. Again, the first answer we gave is somewhat implied in Rashi, who says, Truma has Kodesh L'Hashem, but it doesn't have the word who, whereas Maaser has Kodesh L'Hashem, it does have the word who. So Rashi seems to say that the Gemara is cumulative over here. You need all of these aspects to get there. Again, other Rishonim give the second answer that we noted over here, which is that who is available, he is not available, and therefore it's not a question. Now, What the Gemara just did was prove that Maaser Sheni cannot be utilized for Kiddushin. The simplest reading, and this way seemingly Rashi reads the Gemara, is this is the source for Rabbi Meir's position. That Rabbi, why does Rabbi Meir say that Ben Bishulgeg, Ben Bemezid Maaser does not work? Because of this pasuk, and that's what we're learning. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda, who says that Maaser Sheni is Mamon Balim, belongs to the Balim, that's why you can utilize it. Now, by Mezid it works, because then you know you're utilizing it. Bishogeg, it doesn't work because there's an unintentional consequence, which we'll see now, if he does it. That's the way that Rashi learns it, that we just explained the Shita of Rabbi Meir. The upcoming Gemara is going to explain the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Because Rabbi Meir believes that Maaser Sheni basically is Mamon Gvoa, belongs to Hashem, and therefore you can't utilize it for Kiddushin. Rabbi Yehuda believes that it's Mamon Balim and you could use it. We have to explain the case where you can't, but otherwise the default would be that you could use it. There are other Rishonim as well as Achronim that say that this source here is the source both for Rabbi Meir and for Rabbi Yehuda. The cases of where Rabbi Yehuda rejects it is because of this problem, that only the question of why by Mimizid it works is what you have to answer, but otherwise is the source for both of their positions. All right, now the Gemara continues and says, "Ubehegdesh, God's hegdesh b'mezid kidesh b'shogeg lo kidesh divi Rabbi Meir." Rabbi Meir says that if you do it intentionally, it works, seemingly because you were moel, and if you're moel, you move the money out to chulin, you misappropriate the hegdesh, it changes into chulin, it's now yours to utilize. By shogeg, where there is no me'ilah, the money remains hegdesh, and that's why you can't use it. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'shogeg kidesh b'mezid lo kidesh. Rabbi Yehuda says it's just the opposite. And again, we'll have to understand what the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda is. I'm Rabbi Yaakov. Shmat mi na'ad Rabbi Yochanan. I heard from Rabbi Yochanan Tarte. I heard two things. Shigigat maser de Rabbi Yehuda and shigigat hegdesh de Rabbi Meir. The explanation behind why by shogeg of Rabbi Yehuda, by maser, he says that it doesn't work. Now again, Rashi says here, because Rabbi Yehuda believes that it's Mamon Balim, and it should work, Maaser Sheni. So why by Shogeg does it not work? Rabbi Yochanan gave the explanation for that. As well as the fact that by Rabbi Meir, who says that when B'mezid intentionally you misappropriate Ekdesh, you can't use it. By Shogeg, he says, you cannot utilize it. Again, Rabbi Yochanan gave the explanation for why it doesn't work over here. Shnehem Ein Isha Mitkadesh Be'em. Both those instances, the result in halacha is that the woman cannot be married with the monies, either from the shogeg of Hegdesh or the shogeg of Maaser Sheni. The shogeg of Maaser Sheni according to Rabbi Yehuda and the shogeg of Hegdesh according to Rabbi Meir. Chada, lefi Sheni Isha Rutsa. One of them, the reason is because the woman doesn't want it. V'chada, lefi Sheni Shnehem Rutsim. And one of them because neither party wants it to happen. V'lo yadana ha-minayu. And I don't know which one is which. I don't know which is the explanation of each of these two items. As Rashi notes over here, the nafkamina is, who do we need to clarify with? Which is that if the underlying chazoka is that this individual does not want this, if we go and check with them, they say, I do want it, we could override. How many parties do you need to check with? If it's only the woman's position that we're worried about, then you have to check with the woman, the man's position's irrelevant. Or, if you say it's both parties don't want it, then you have to check with both parties before we're sure that it goes through, despite the fact that most people would not want it to go through. So I'm Rabbi Yirmiyah. Next day Anon. Let's try to figure it out ourselves. Maaser ihi lo nechala. In the case of Maaser Sheni, she does not want it. Mishum tircha du urcha. Because of the difficulty of travel. In that she will have to transport the Maaser Sheni now to Yerushalayim. She didn't know that. When she got the money, she had no idea that she was getting money that was Maaser Sheni. She thinks she's getting money that she can utilize here. All of a sudden she finds out, because it was done by Shogeg, that this Maaser Sheni is Maaser Sheni, and now she's got to take it up to Yerushalayim. That because of the Tircha to take it up to Yerushalayim, it's a Hekdesh Ta'ut, because of that mistake. Ihu Nechale, Tinik Ne'itzita Memela. For him, it's a great deal. He has to pay Maaser Sheni anyway. He's got to get to Yerushalayim. Meantime, he gets the bonus, or the added benefit, that he now gets Kiddushin with this Maaser Sheni. Not only that, he also gets someone else to have to take it up to Yerushalayim. Ella Hekdesh Tarvayu Lunechlu. By Hekdesh, neither of them want it. Dinitchil Hekdesh Ayudayu. So that there should not be a profaning, a misappropriation of Hekdesh on their hands. I mean, there's an Aveira that is done over here. The Aveira is that they are misappropriating Hekdesh, they're being Moel Bagdesh. Now the truth is, the only one who's moel b'ekdesh is the man himself, because he's the one who expends the money. When he does that, it goes out to chulin. When the woman receives it, she's getting chulin. So truthfully, the woman has no reason to be upset over here, or to say the avera is done al yada. Nevertheless, it's a gnai to this woman, or she doesn't feel comfortable participating in a transaction that generates an avera. So even though the avera is not particularly associated with her, nevertheless, the fact that her kudushin were made under the umbrella of an isur, or she's causing someone else to violate an isur, she's not comfortable with that, and therefore both parties over here are uncomfortable, and that's why when it's done unintentionally, we say it doesn't work. That is what Rabbi Yirmiyah speculates. Rabbi Yaakov Amar Ipcha Mistavra, who says you have to learn your way, I could just as easily come up with a logical argument to say just the opposite, which is, Milo Ika the Meimar, can't you say, Maser Ihi Lo Nechala Mishum Tircha Dorcha? She's not happy because of the need to transport it. And he's not happy about it because now he is responsible for it until it gets to Yerushalayim. Now Rashi explains, it's for an interesting reason Rashi says this. Rashi says over here, that the guaranteeing that it gets to Yerushalayim is on his back. Because over here, the Maaser Sheni is worthless. You can't eat the Maaser Sheni in its present location because you have to take it to Yerushalayim. The only time the Kedushim will be Chal is when she gets to Yerushalayim, when it's a Shaveh Pruta. That's when it has value. It has no value currently in the present location. Shamaser Imbo Kan Shaveh Pruta. Shaloni Tan Lotzio, it'll be Yerushalayim. When you get to Yerushalayim, it'll be a deferred Kiddushin according to Rashi. When you get to Yerushalayim, when it's worth a Shaveh Pruta, that's when it'll go to effect. And therefore, Rashi says that he has to warrantee that they get up to Yerushalayim, otherwise he has no Kiddushin on his hands, because if it doesn't get to Yerushalayim, then he's not married to this woman, because it wasn't a Shaveh Pruta over here. So why does that matter? If he took it up himself, he'd also have to warranty. It's his problem to get it up there. So what does it make a difference if the woman's taking it or not? So he says, Rashi says, the Shriach Le'nusei Tzvei Gabi Yitzita Migavra, that women have more difficulty in traveling, especially in their day where there were dangers on the road or possibilities of being taken advantage of on the road, and therefore the woman is more subject to loss, and now he has to warranty out that loss. That's one reason given by Rashi. Inami, the second reason given by Rashi is, L'rami achrayut alei, v'lo neichalei l'itnas mina. He has no obligation over here to warranty or guarantee it. Nevertheless, he doesn't want her to lose it. Penti atzev, because maybe she'll get upset. V'tomar lo, kidishtani v'davar shlo neneti bo. In the end, you gave me a worthless item, or it didn't work out. Meaning that he doesn't want her coming back with complaints. It's more of an intangible item. Technically, everything's fine. He doesn't have to warranty it. It's a good deal for him. But nevertheless, he doesn't want the woman coming back and saying, I got a bad deal. I got a rotten egg here, because I ended up getting this Maaser Sheni, which I never got to Yerushalayim. So that's another possibility. Now, there are a number of questions on this. Tosfot himself asks on Rashi that one of the problems is what you had asked before, which is that there's a delayed effectiveness of the Kiddushin until you reach Yerushalayim. And Tosfot says we never find that that's the case. Nobody ever says that the Kiddushim are delayed until you get to Yerushalayim. Everybody says that the Kiddushim are effective immediately at the time that you give it. That's number one. Number two is, other Rishonim say, how do you know it's not Shaveh Pruta? Shaveh Pruta has to do with the quantity of Maaser Sheni that you have there. Meaning that there's a certain quantity of Maaser Sheni which is worthwhile to transport to Yerushalayim and eat it there. And people will pay you money for the Maaser Sheni. They won't pay their full value of the Maaser Sheni here in the Chvulin, but they'll pay you a discounted amount to take it up to Yerushalayim and eat it. So there's a possibility that it is Shaveh Pruta over here. That's another problem. So one of the ways to answer that problem is to say that Eino Chanami, it is worth a Shaveh Pruta here. That's not the problem. The problem is the fact that the woman is of a mindset that she's getting something of a certain value. And she's getting married based on the value she's receiving. All of a sudden, after the fact, they figure out that it was Maaser Sheni, she got a significantly diminished value than what she thought. So yes, it's worth a pruta, but it's not what she thought. She would thought she was getting like 100 zuz. Meantime, she gets a pruta. That's not what she bargained for. And that's why there's a problem possibly with the Kiddushin. That's one aspect. The second aspect Tosfot says is that he thinks Rashi's second answer is right. And that the problem here of deferred effectiveness of the Kiddushin we don't find. And therefore he favors heavily the second interpretation of Rashi, but then he runs out into a problem, which is, Alma mashma de maisu sheni, mamon he jotu, the Rabbi Yehuda afilu bigvulin. From this you would conclude that maisu sheni is ma'ot of the balim, even in the gvulin. Even before you get to Yerushalayim, it belongs to the individual. Otherwise, how is he generating kiddushin in the case of mezid? So that's because it's mamon balim. By shukeg, there was a misleading, and that's what causes the problem over there, because either the woman or he were misled or mistaken in their assumptions, and that's why it doesn't work. But then it also runs into a problem, which is that the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Maisa Sheni is patur michala in the Gvulin. And the Gemara says, you know why? Because, Amrachista machol Maisa Sheni b'Yerushalayim, der meir sever mamon gvoho, rabbanan sever mamon hejotu. The machloket is by Maisa Sheni in Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim, there's a machloket whether Maisa Sheni belongs to Hashem still, like Rabbi Meir, like we saw before, or does it belong to the Baalim? Aval b'gul v'lim, zivrei akol p'turim. Everybody agrees when Maisa Sheni is in the Gvulin, it belongs to Hashem, and not to the Baalim. Well, if that's the case, then by chala, if we say that you're not chayav in chala of Maisa Sheni in the Gvulin because it doesn't belong to you, how could you, according to Rabbi Yehuda, be mekadesh and isha with that money? So Tosef says over here, v'yesh lamar, da'afakav do Rabbi Yehuda mamon hejotu, afilu b'gvulin. Even though according to Rabbi Yehuda, in the Gvulin, it's called your money and you can be Mekadesh Nisha with it. Mikol makom kam Rabbi Chista, lav isahi litchayev chala. It's not called a loaf or a dough in the Gvulin. Ho vein ruya sham lechol, since you can't eat it over there. Since the requirement of chala is reshit erisotechem, it means an arisa, a dough that is yours to utilize, that's not the case. Because in the Gvulin, you can't utilize it as a dough. And therefore, there's no chiyuv chala. So Tosfot over here walks a very fine line, saying that Rabbi Yehuda believes that it's money enough for you to use for kiddushin, but it's not enough to be called your dough, or to be called dough at all, because it's not edible until you reach Yerushalayim. And therefore, you'll get a bifurcation of the din, which is that chala is not relevant to Maisur Sheni and the Gvulin, yet you can be Mekadesh and Isha with that Maisur Sheni. Right now, the Gemara says, by Hekdesh, Bishlama, Ihi, Lo Nechala, the Nitchel, Hekdesh, Ayada. But then by the case of Hekdesh, where now he's saying that it's only her that is upset, she doesn't want to be a party to this Chilul of Hekdesh. Why isn't he is happy with the fact that now he's able to acquire a woman? And since he's able to acquire the woman, he's willing to overcome the Chilul Hekdesh, in order to do this, because in the end he gets the woman, and then he'll replace, so he'll pay back Hekdesh, and he's willing to do that. So now, Baimine Rova mi Rav Chista. Rova asks Rav Chista, Isha ein mitkadeshet. We've concluded that the woman is not mitkadeshet in these cases by the Maisur Sheni. Ma'ot, ma'oshi etzu l'chulin. The money, is it profaned? Is it misappropriated to the extent that it goes to chulin? Now truthfully, the question seems ludicrous, because if he can't be Mekadesh the Isha with it, the whole reason he can't be Mekadesh the Isha with it is because it's not Chulin, it's not his. And since it's not his, he can't utilize it. If it's not successful at being Mekadesh the Isha, then why should it go out to Chulin? The answer might be, and that's what the Gemara is trying to determine here, is that his mere trying might be enough to be Mechalel the Hekdesh over here. So again, when he does it intentionally, he knows he's doing it, and he's Mechalel the Kodesh, and it turns into Chulin, and that's why he's actually able to marry with it, according to Rabbi Meir. Then, in the case of Shogeg, where he's unsuccessful at doing it, maybe it should still become Chulin. Not because he wanted to make it into Chulin, but because he attempted to make it into Chulin, and he attempted to marry the woman with it. It fails because the woman says, I don't want an Avera. Maybe he even doesn't want the Avera. But yet he still did a transaction. And maybe that's enough to generate or move it to Chulin. So that's what the Gemara says. Amalai, Isha ein mikadeshet, ma'ot heichu yitzu l'chulin. So he asks, that's exactly the question that he poses back to him is, if you can't marry the woman, why would the money go out to Chulin? So that brings us back to square one. What was even the question here? And that's what I described to you. The question might revolve around this issue of whether, because he transacted, even though it fails, the mere fact that he transacted might be enough to generate or bring it to Chulin. Then it says, "By mine Rabbi Chia ba'avin me Rav Chista, b'mecher mai." In transactions, what is the din? By a case of shogeg, what is the din? Does the transaction go through? Amalei, after mecher lo kana. By mecher it also doesn't go through because the parties are not interested in utilizing hekdesh or doing any sur in order to generate their transaction. So again, here by transactions, you do it intentionally. It's michulau. You've profaned it, and it will go out to chulin, and the transaction goes through. What about the case of shogeg? Do we say that the shogeg case by mecher goes through? Amarlei af b'mecher lo kana. Even by mecher, it doesn't work. Velo yatzu amaut to chulin, and the money does not go out to chulin. Rashi explains over here. Ve'ein mila the Rabbi Meir back deshot ela ba'ochel ochle hekdesh. That for Rabbi Meir, the only way that you can have hekdesh be a case of me'ila is when you eat it and you consume it. And that is because no matter where you are, the monies retain their shame hekdesh. What Rashi says over here is that Rabbi Meir's shita is premised on the fact that hekdesh is hekdesh, and you can't change that. No matter what you do to it, no matter how you utilize it, it always remains hekdesh. As Tosfot explains over here, that wherever they are, they're in the possession of God or Hekdesh with regards to Shogeg. That by Shogeg, there's no way to generate Mi'ilah or that the monies will be removed from Hekdesh's possession to Chulin unless you consume. That's the only way you get Mi'ilah to Shogeg. But if you do not consume it, then it remains in the hands of Hekdesh and there's no such thing as Mi'ilah by Hekdesh. That's the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir's position. So then, how do you have mi'ilah min haTorah? That's what Rashi says. You have to consume it. You have to basically obliterate it and eliminate it from the world and get hana. How do you do that? You take something that belongs to Hekdesh and you eat it. So then you've eliminated it and you've misappropriated Hekdesh. Now you have a case of mi'ilah. But, by the case of mezid, why does Rabbi Meir say it goes through then? If Rabbi Meir and me believes it's always Hekdesh, why does it go through? Tell us what over here explains. Avol b'mezid kidesh Rabbi Meir l'tamei damar hekdesh b'mezid mitchalel ve'emila l'mishinoi kolomar b'mezid. So that's what Tosfot explains here, that as long as you're shogeg, according to Rabbi Meir, the monies always remain in hekdesh's possession, and no matter what, it remains or retains the shame hekdesh, and you can only have this me'ilah in a case where you eat it or consume it. Whereas, by the case of mezid, are you intentionally do it, that is a shinoi, that is a change, and that change generates the chilul or the chulin that you need. And that's only true by mezid, by hekdesh, where the Torah teaches you by mi'ilah that it goes out to chulin. But by maaser, where it belongs to Hashem, whether it's mezid or shogeg, it retains its name of shem hekdesh, and you cannot marry with it at all, according to Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that it's mamon balim, then by a mezid it works, by maaser, b'shogeg it doesn't work because there's an unintentional consequence of either the woman having to now take it up to Yerushalayim, or it's not worth the value that she thought, whatever the reasons are, there's some sort of problem there. And by hekdesh, we have the position of Rabbi Yehuda, where he says that by mezid it does not work, by shogeg it does work. And that we have yet to explain. There are those that want to be dayek from here that that's only true by mecher. But by matona, where one of the parties might be interested in the transaction going through because they are not, quote-unquote, a party to the transaction, they're simply a recipient, and they benefit from it, then they might want the transaction to go through. In that case, it might be that there is mi'ilah, and the ma'ot you'd say the chulin, whereas according to Tosafot, it would not make any difference because according to Tosafot, there is just no mi'ilah by monies or by the utilization of objects. Even by mezid, it's only because we have a specific zerat ha-katuv that allows it, and by shogeg, it doesn't work, period, irrespective of the positions of the two parties as to whether they want the transaction or don't want the transaction. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, Eitve, chenvani kebalabayit. This is talking about the gizbar. The treasurer of Hekdesh gave money to individuals to watch on behalf of Hekdesh. If he gives it to a chenvani, gives it to a storekeeper, what is the status of the money? Kriya balabait, divrei Rabbi Meir. He has the same status as a balabait, that's what Rabbi Meir says. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, chenvani kishuchani. He has the same status as a money changer. But the Mishnah is a Mishnah in Mi'ilah. The Mishnah in Mi'ilah is discussing when the gizbar deposits the money with certain parties, he has to have expectations. which is that if he hands over money to a shulchani to watch, then you could assume that a money changer will utilize the money you give him to do business with it and make money with it, and he'll replace it when you come to get it back from him. So unless you specify otherwise, you have to assume that a money changer will utilize the money. That means if the Gizbar deposits Kodesh money with the Shulchani, and he doesn't specify otherwise, it's not the Shulchani's fault that he utilized that dish. The Aveiro will be on the Gizbar, because the Gizbar did not inform the Shulchani that he shouldn't use the money. If he wraps it up and gives it to him bundled, indicating that he doesn't want it to use it, then it becomes the Shulchani's problem because he shouldn't have touched it. But then in Balabalabait, if the Gizbar gives it to a layperson to watch, then that layperson has no right to utilize it because there's no expectation that a layperson would expend that money. He's simply going to watch it. That means if the Balabait utilizes the money, he's the one who's Mo'el because the Gizbar had no expectation that he would use it, no matter whether it's wrapped and bundled or it's loose change. He has no expectation that the Balabait would use it. The question is a Chenvani, a storekeeper who runs somewhere in the middle. A Chenvani sometimes needs money because he has buyers and sellers coming into his store, but other times he doesn't need money all the time because he works on credit. The buyers come in and they buy on credit. People sell to him on credit, and then he settles out at later dates. So there's a possibility he doesn't need the money all the time. What is the status of a Chenvani? So here we have Machlok in the Mishnah. That Rabbi Meir says Chenvani ke Balabait. That Chenvani has the status of Balabait, which means Alastam, he has no right to use the money. If he utilizes it, then he is Mo'el and not the Gizbar. And Rabbi Yehuda says the Chenvani has a din like a Shulchani, which means that the Gizbar has to assume he's going to utilize it unless he specifies otherwise. And therefore, if the Chenvani uses it, it's the Gizbar who's Mo'el because he didn't give him the information that he needed. This goes back to what we know about Me'ilah, that there's Shliach L'Dvar Aveira by Me'ilah. And therefore, you can have one person take an action and the attribution could go back to the other party. So the question here is, on the Me'ilah, who's responsible? Is it the Gizbar who's responsible, or the party who did it? It depends on what the expectations are. By the Shulchani, it's the Gizbar's problem unless he specifies otherwise. By the Balabait, it's the Balabait's problem unless the Gizbar told him otherwise, but he has no right to use it. The Chenvani is this machloka between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. Ad kan lo mifligei ala de mar saver Chenvani ke Shulchani, or mar saver Chenvani ke Balabait. Their machloka there is what is the status of the storekeeper. Aval de kuli alma, imotzi mal, everybody agrees that if you utilize it, you would be Mo'el, and that's Rabbi Meir. We just said now, or we just concluded, that Rabbi Meir believes there's no such thing as Mi'ilah when it's done be shogeg. There is no Mi'ilah. Hektesh remains Hektesh, no matter where it is. This Mishnah seems to indicate otherwise, which is that the Chenvani has a status of a Balabait, and that means that the money is utilized, even b'shogeg, that there is a problem of mi'ilah over here. And he will be responsible for that mi'ilah. Rabbi Meir l'dvarav Rabbi Yehuda kamar. Now Rabbi Meir is saying this in the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. The didi imotzi nami lomal. According to me, even if the Chenvani or the Balabait spend the money, there is no mi'ilah over here because it remains hekdesh. And it was done unintentionally. And since it was done unintentionally, it remains hekdesh. Ela didach. According to your reasoning, Rabbi Yehuda, odoli mia de Chenvani ke Balabait. You who says when you spend the money, there is mi'ilah, at least agree to me that within that position, the Chenvani has a din of a Balabait. Bamarlay, and Rabbi Yehuda responds to him and says, well, ke Shulchani. I don't think he has the status of a Balabait. I think he has the status of a Shulchani. So they're arguing within the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, basically. But Rabbi Meir says, I don't think there's any problem mi'ilah here whatsoever, because it's all done to Shogeg. And according to Rabbi Meir, Bishogeg, money does not leave Hekdesh's property unless you consume it. And therefore, there is no Me'ilah over here. But according to you, Rabbi Yehuda, who there is Me'ilah over here, what is the status of a Chenvani? Rabbi Meir says the status of a Chenvani is a Balabait. Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't agree. I think the status of a Chenvani is Ke Shulchani. But then again, it's not a question on the conclusion that we just had, that Rabbi Meir believes by Shogeg, there's no such thing as Me'ilah unless you consume it, unless you totally wipe it out and get enough from it. Now, according to this, it does raise the issue, as according to Rabbi Meir, if there is no me'ilah whatsoever by shogeg, then what is the lashon here of odili? Agree to me. So you could read it like Rashi, which means agree to me that the gizbar was not mo'el. But neither was the chenvani as well. He was not mo'el as well. But the simple reading of the text here is odili, that the gizbar is not mo'el, but the Chenvani was Mo'el, but that's against the Shita of Rabbi Meir. So for that reason, there are Rishonim who changed the girsa here because of that problem. But there are other Rishonim, like the Ramban, who believe that that first half of the Mishnah must not be according to the sheet of Rabbi Meir, because the first half of the Mishnah suggests that someone who's Mu'el B'Shogeg, the money goes out to Chulin, and somebody has Me'il over here, which is against that position of Rabbi Meir. And therefore, the beginning of the Mishnah is definitely not Shitat Rabbi Meir. And the second half of the Mishnah, we have the Machlokes Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Meir is a very defined and contained Machloket that is not necessarily connected to the rest of the Mishnah about whether when you are a Motzi B'Shogeg, it is Me'ilah. Rabbi Meir is not even addressing that. He's simply addressing the issue of what the status of Eichen money is, not getting into the issue as to whether anybody is Mo'el here or not, because according to Rabbi Meir, there is no Me'ilah, because as long as you have a Din of Shogeg, there is no Me'ilah, because we're not Motzi, the Ma'ot, the Chulin, because it remains in the hands of Ekdesh, no matter where it's found. All right, we're going to stop here on the last line of Nun Gimel Amud Bet.